When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's no world of Australian politics where Labor and the Greens can operate independently of each other and hope to be able to influence, you know, pass legislation and influence Australian politics, because at the very least it requires good cooperation in the Senate.
Well, hello, lovely people of podcasts, and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and with me in the studio this week is two local compadres. We have the ACT Chief Minister, Andrew Barr, and we have Shane Rattenbury, who is also the leader of the ACT Greens. And are you still in your old ministry? Forgive me.
No, we've just had a reshuffle, Catherine, yes. And I've just become the Attorney General of the ACT.
Oh, my God.
And I'm still doing a lot of the energy policy work.
Well, that's a relief. Okay, so let's get into this conversation. I wanted to bring the gents it's been a high-octane political week as we're recording. The American election is yet to be resolved, and it's hard for any of us, I think, to concentrate on anything other than that until that is resolved. But anyway, people around the country will know that the ACT had an election recently, and Labor and the Greens have formed another coalition or minority government in the ACT. Now, I'll just start with the easy question, guys. It doesn't really feel at the moment like the social democratic moment, all in capitals, if you sort of look at the political landscape. So why do you think you won?
Well, thanks, Catherine. I'd say a combination of some external factors that favoured incumbency. So in our case, the bushfires over the summer, I think, was probably a real turning point, galvanised our community, made people recognise the importance of government and what it can do to support communities and, in this instance, to protect lives and property. And then we had a pretty devastating hailstorm as well in Canberra that did, you know, a couple of $1 billion worth of damage. We were just getting over those two events, plus the smoke of the summertime, and then COVID hit. So I think what we've seen across the nation and internationally as well is where governments have handled sort of these major crises well, voters have rewarded them with another term in office. But for us, it wasn't just about getting the tick on competency around bushfire management and the pandemic. It was also about the future. And we had to, and I was very conscious of this, had to have a plan for the next term of government that outlined a positive vision of what we were going to do with that additional 4 years. And for a long-term government, even though it's generally been a minority government through two decades, to ask for a third, effectively the beginning of a third decade in office, was going to require experience and new policy. And I think we got that balance right.
Mm-hmm. Shane, thoughts?
Yeah, and for those with those contextual issues that Andrew put out there, you know, as the Greens, we sort of put forward this idea that 2020 has shown us that business as usual doesn't cut it. That we, as political leaders, we need to be making sure we are mapping out a different way, whether that is tackling the climate crisis or addressing issues of housing affordability or, frankly, income inequality, which is growing in Australia. These issues have been, I think, really laid bare this year, particularly by the pandemic and the economic consequences of it. And so we talked very much about that desire. And I think the other factor that played out was that the Liberal Party, as the opposition party, ran a very particular agenda around cost of living. And I think in the Canberra electorate, people were looking for a greater vision than that. Mm. It was a very narrow focus. We saw a whole lot of Boris Johnson-style stunts from the Leader of the Opposition. And I think the community did not get behind that either. So the combination, I think, of both ourselves and the Labor Party running quite positive and forward-looking agendas and the narrow focus of the Liberal Party really, for me, was the deciding factor in the election.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have known each other for a fair while, I think.
Well, yes, I was recalling, you know, where I first heard about this this eco commerce student from ANU who was going to run on the Green Alliance ticket for student politics in 1993, and that's when I think I first met Shane. I think I can probably say this, but most of the student Labor people thought he was a young lib.
Really?
It's true, yes.
Why?
I had a lot of friends who played rugby.
Okay.
And that was sort of associated with the more liberal crowd at university.
And
quite a few friends that came from country areas. And I think that a lot of assumptions were made there, despite the fact that I spent a lot of my university time down in the Southeast Forests on protests, organising forest-related protests in Canberra, those sort of things, with actually someone who's now my chief of staff. We were in the Environment Club together at uni. So
yeah, right.
I'm interested. It is always funny to hear that.
Someone else narrate your history.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, it became pretty apparent to us reasonably quickly. I mean, the context of this at ANU in the early 1990s was a quite a broad coalition of really of progressive forces.
Yeah.
But it came off the back of needing to win the student union and the students association off the Liberal Party. And so all of the progressive forces from the right wing of the Labor Party to the left wing of the Labor Party to the environment movement, even the International Socialist Organization may well have run candidates and preferences, and we won.
Right,
so
right.
I would say it's probably one of the first early political lessons for progressive politics. We've got to find a way to work together.
Coalition
that's how
building.
We that's yeah. how we beat the okay. Conservatives.
And were you mates or were you transactional allies?
I think more acquaintances initially.
Mm-hmm.
Shane was in you were sort of commerce law, mm-hmm. weren't you, principally? Yeah. And I was in the sort of arts economics faculty. So we crossed over a little bit, mm-hmm. but no, I think it was later. But that sort of chain then went off to do some other things before our paths crossed again. I think probably just before the 2008 election.
I'd spent a few years overseas, so I was completely in a different scene for quite some time there. I went and did the expat thing,
mm-hmm.
travelled the world. I headed up the Oceans campaign at Greenpeace International, so quite a different career for a while there.
Mm, right, okay. And does the longevity help? Or is it a barrier to entry sometimes?
No, I think it gave me a very good perspective on the issues Shane's been passionate about, and I know they're genuine and lifelong.
Yeah.
That's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember having this sort of very similar conversations with my colleagues at around the time of the 2008 election when Shane was elected. As to, there's all these new Greens in the parliament. Who are they? Well, what do we know about them? And I was able to recount the story that I largely just have to my colleagues.
You'll be quite quiet, Jay. I'm sensing there's an untold story behind
No. Look, my flirtation with university politics was probably only that one election. I mean, I didn't really do university politics at all. We were very much more sort of in this environment group doing our thing, and it was a bit of a sideline. But it is, I guess it's a story of Canberra to an extent. It is not that big a city.
No.
And one of the nice things about the city is you do make these connections again at different points in life with people. And, this one's turned out funny. And, you know, down the years, over the last decade or so that I've been in the Assembly, and Andrew got there a couple of years before me, necessity has made us work together, but I think we've been able to find a really constructive way to do it. And having some of those shared touch points in history, I think helps that. You know, it opens doors in a way that
otherwise wouldn't. Would you say you trust each other?
Yes.
And it's sort of I ask that in the loaded sense of politics, right? Mm. That it's sort of like politics is often more about transactions than trust. But would you say you trust one another?
Yeah, I think we've really built that over a number of years in the sense that, again, probably by necessity at the beginning, we started to work together, but through working on a range of things where you both share views, people don't go out and leak them to the media, you have understandings that people stick to, that trust builds up over time. And so certainly come this election particularly where, you know, you come out the other side and you've got to sit down to make a governing arrangement. having that understanding that you know that you can say something frank to somebody in a room and it won't suddenly appear on the front page of the paper creates a really strong foundation for being able to work through some hard issues.
And we'll get to the nuts and bolts of the governing agreement in a tick, but because there's more Greens now in the Assembly, Shane, right? So, and forgive me because I have been preoccupied both with the federal scene and the American election. So, and I know you guys you were sworn in yesterday or the day before or whatever. I'm conscious there's more Greens. So are there more Greens in the ministry now?
There are, that's what I thought.
So the numbers in the ACT are a lot simpler than the US election. For those that aren't from Canberra, we have a 25-member assembly. Yes. As a result of this election, the Greens tripled our representation. We went from 2 to 6.
Yep.
The Labor Party's on 9 and the Liberal – sorry, Labor Party's on 10.
Come on.
10 and 11, yeah.
So right, between Labor and Greens, we have 16 of the 25 seats now. And as part of this agreement, I was the only Green Minister in Cabinet previously.
Yes.
We now have 3.
Well, this is what I want to ask you. It's previously you have been the Green in the government. It's been a solo act and you two have a relationship which sets up this whole proposition. Obviously, heading into this term of government, then you've got a little caucus to whip and you guys have got to work out an operating tempo where there's not one Green in the government, there's 3 Greens in the government. So how's that going to go?
I think that's a real question for us. As the Greens, we've now got to put in place a series of internal structures that we've not needed in the past, from very basic things like party room rules to how we are going to operate with a number of ministers in Cabinet. And I think that's going to be a question for the whole Cabinet.
Mm.
The Cabinet is... it operates in, I think, a very positive way in the sense that people tend not, as the what might be called the outsider, as the Green sitting in the Labor Cabinet, as I have been for the last couple of terms, you know, it's not obviously driven by factions. I'm sure that stuff happens, but the ALP faction stuff is a black box to me.
Mm-hmm.
The ministers just come in and we just discuss things in, I think, a pretty open way. And so, again, that gives me confidence that we'll be able to bring a couple more Greens into the discussion without it becoming some factionalised cabinet. At least that's the spirit I'm hoping for.
Yeah, but it's kind of a butterfly effect, isn't it, though? You never know what, and I'm not putting the mockers on this at all, but you never know what extra dimension, if the picture changes ever so slightly, you don't really know in advance how that's going to play out, like what the reaction is from...
Yep.
Well, Labor folks and also from Green folks.
And I'm acutely aware of that, and I think there's a big onus on me as the chair of the cabinet to ensure that we have a consensus-based approach to decision making, and where we don't immediately reach consensus, that we take the time. If issues are contentious, then we can come back to them.
Mm.
We don't need to have rushed decision making. Making stuff up on the run is not going to necessarily be helpful nor contribute to good governance.
Mm.
For national listeners, the Parliament's 25, the executive is 9. The 9 are 6 Labor and 3 Green, and within the 6 Labor, they are evenly split between the different wings of the Labor Party.
Right.
So there's 3, 3, and 3 for those who are very factionally minded. But again, the way we have operated our cabinet is, and I sort of take Shane as my proof point here, is that he would not necessarily know in a cabinet meeting, you know, that's the left wing view and that's the right wing view. It's not been the way that things have operated. And that I think is possible in a smaller group. It can become really destructive if people sort of just move into little blocks, particularly when there's such a small number of ministers.
Yeah.
It's not like you've got a group of 30 here, and trying to organise that probably does need a degree of the discipline that comes with larger parties.
Yeah.
But it is. Important thing for me will be how the Greens Party manages cabinet and non-executive membership.
Yep.
And that's something Shane and I can talk about. Not that the Greens are going to pick up entirely Labor's operating arrangement, but we have governed for a period with cabinet ministers and people on the backbench. And, you know, managing those tensions and ambitions is what every governing party leader has to do.
It is. It's part of the part of the job description, but interesting nonetheless. So tell us about the agreement, fellas. Like, obviously we don't have to do this exhaustively, but what, in the broad, what does it cover? What does it deliver?
Well, it covers stability of government and sort of the machinery things that are necessary to, you know, to run an effective government. And then it's incredibly policy rich. It represents the amalgamation of some of our election commitments whilst keeping the absolute integrity of both what we put forward, smartly bringing a number of them together to deliver. Actually, in some instances, improved. I think we probably both step back and go, oh, we probably should have thought of that one before the election. And we got together and put that in place, particularly on climate action, but also in our response to housing and homelessness, a big, you know, a big investment coming in social housing. And then there's, I guess, a series of other policy and legislative reforms that would fit in the social policy category as well, I think, as some really important jobs and economic recovery measures that we've both signed up to.
And what do you want to highlight, Shane? Yeah.
Well, I think one of the real strengths of the agreement, this is the third or fourth iteration of it now, and it gets tweaked every time, but there's a clear ability there for the parties to work together, to collaborate. But if we do disagree, we've got the mechanisms to resolve those disputes. And I think what's for me really important in that is we can actually disagree on something, go into the parliament and potentially vote separately, but still keep governing. That doesn't lead to the collapse of the government. I think there's a maturity in that that actually enables us to sometimes get through the tough moments. And there are points where disagreement comes along. It's not the main focus, but it gives us that sort of safety valve for making sure that we're able to have that difference and just move on and keep governing, because the community, that's what they want us to do. They want us to deliver.
Yes. Well, they actually want outcomes. With this dispute, just call it the dispute clause for want of a better locution. Does it envisage that if disputes happen about a particular policy issue, that you folks would vote as blocks, right? Or could it be like, I don't know, I'm completely extemporizing here, but let's say Labor was on board for a particular thing, and you know, one of your caucus could sign up to that, but two of you couldn't. What would you do then? What is it envisaged that in order for the functionality of this thing, that it's, you've got to preserve caucus solidarity? I mean, that's a Labor tradition, right? Yep. The caucus, like the ding dong happens, then everybody accepts the decision. There's no kind of wandering about. But you guys are making up your own processes or developing your own processes. So, I mean, this is slightly in the weeds, but I'm just curious.
Sure. Well, look, the structure allows for an amendment process there's agreement in principle, but wanting to, you know, sort of look at the detail, then there's a within cabinet amendment process that Greens ministers, or indeed Labor ministers, can bring forward, because there will be Greens ministers who will be bringing forward proposals for government approval, and that may require the Labor Party to see.
Absolutely,
to
it cuts both ways. Yep.
Yes. Yep. Then there is a mechanism for agreement in principle, but amendments to be moved on the floor of the parliament. And then there is the last resort, which is we just cannot agree.
Yep.
And then is a matter, I presume this will principally be the case for the Labor Party, but where you take something to the floor of the parliament. Mm-hmm. And if we couldn't get the Greens to agree to it, then we'd need the opposition to agree to it.
Yeah.
And look, my past experience is that, you know, most of the issues, 80, 90% of them, can be resolved by amendment discussion within the cabinet. About 5% are resolved by amendment on the floor, and, you know, the parties take their chances there. And then there are a bunch of issues where Shane gets to issue the media release, which says the old parties have ganged up on the Greens.
Wickedness.
Indeed.
Wickedness.
It does still happen.
Colin Rattenbury. Yes. Yes. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Can I ask this? I want to sort of bring us out to some broader concepts associated with this agreement now. But one of the sort of points of tension between Labor and the Greens federally and in the other state jurisdictions are these endless turf wars over seats, that basically you're prosecuting the same battles for the same number of usually inner urban seats, not exclusively, but often. And that for many progressive voters looks like a zero-sum game that is deeply irritating to people,
Understandably.
So does it – is one of the reasons why just call it a de-escalation effect of the arrangements in the ACT – because the voting system here basically pits you all against one another all the time, right? Like the tickets in the seats. It's not. It's like, you know, here's the seat. Here's the number of would be candidates in this seat. In essence, you all run against each other, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's a bit simplistic.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, and obviously there's how to vote tickets and all that stuff. But
not so much. And I think that's possibly one of the
educate
reasons.
Me, Andrew.
Yeah.
Educate me.
Look, I could spend half an hour on this, but I'll try and do it in 30 seconds. In essence, yes, there is some competition between the two parties, but because it's proportional representation, there is an expectation, certainly in the electorate that Shane and I both represent, that the Greens are going to win a seat under their own steam on first preferences.
Yep.
And so we actually were able to collaborate in our seat anyway through Labor preferences, got a second Green up and we defeated a Liberal.
Yes.
And so our electorate, which has five members, now has four, two Labor, two Green and one Liberal. And so that is helpful when we can, in fact, collaborate to take a seat off the Liberal
Party.
Yes,
exactly.
A bit harder and for the Labor Party when, in this election, there are a couple of marginal seats in the outer suburban areas that went Green on Labor preferences.
Yep.
But I note that in previous elections, they went Labour on Green preferences.
Yes.
So there are swings,
so swings
and roundabouts in the system.
So, and
that's the nature of Hare Clark. You know, there are fine margins.
Yep.
And, you know, for us, we had a great election this time. We picked up four seats. Interestingly, two of them from Labour and two of them from Liberal in terms of where things fell.
But so I was very happy with them winning seats off the Libs. Not so much about the,
but it comes down to just where you fall on that online and in the way the accounting system is done. So,
yes. Yeah. But it's, I get that, but it's sort of like, and you're talking about, you know, new concept, you know, like actively constructive arrangements in order to get more progressive candidates up, right? I mean, obviously this happens federally and in the states as well, but it's a bit unusually so here. But it's, yeah, I don't know. It's, obviously the voting system, is more favourable to Greens candidates than the voting system that exists at the national level. I'm just fascinated by the de-escalation that can happen here.
Well, I'll make one other quick observation that, you know, just look at the recent Queensland state election. There were two seats that the Greens won. One where it was essentially a Green Liberal contest that the Greens won on Labor preferences. And again, I'm comfortable with that. That's, you know, if Labor can't win the seat, then we should support another progressive party. The one that is harder and more challenging and really hits on the point that that you've raised here was South Brisbane.
Yes.
And that you've effectively had a contest between probably two of the most progressive women.
A massive progressive off.
But I mean, that reflects the seat too. It is a very progressive seat. That's where it's difficult. I think I look to Victoria, and there's seats south of the Yarra that where the Greens had a serious crack at winning some seats off the Liberal Party.
Yes.
That sort of thing. I mean, if there can be a little bit more focus on that, I think that serves both parties well. But I understand and acknowledge that there are other areas where, you know, where like in Melbourne, the federal seat of Melbourne and others, where the Greens are in a contest with the Labor Party, and that's where it becomes difficult to manage. Our electoral system allows for that, but there's still a little bit of tension there. But my view on this is that, well, that should sharpen up the Labor Party's approach to campaigning. We've got to get good candidates. We've got to run good grassroots campaigns, and there's swings and roundabouts in politics. Shane's team have had an excellent result this time, but in our parliament, there's five marginal seats effectively.
Yep.
And they're holding all five of them at the moment. So,
that's true. The other thing that's different here, Catherine, is, you know, and I've looked at, for example, the Tasmania model, where our party had a similar result, where we had two cabinet ministers in a Labor government down there, and we held five seats, 25-member parliament, very similar situation to the ACT. What we don't have here is some of those really divisive issues that the Labor Party particularly struggles on in relation to the Greens. So whether it's forestry or mining, that really two split the two parties when you get to that sort of union end of the Labor Party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We don't have those here, and that takes some of that big tension away.
Yeah, I'm very glad you brought that into the conversation because, of course, Canberra is a unique electorate in that sense.
In so many ways.
So it's it's true.
Best educated electorate, Catherine.
No. Well, it is different here, right? Things are different here. And that also influences the sort of, call it the general amity or equanimity
in
the system.
One really other quick point here is that, for example, on energy policy, which has been diabolical across the nation, our move to 100% renewable energy in the ACT is a job creator. Mm. We went from importing 100% coal-fired energy.
Power from New
we
South
now
Wales.
Have thousands of jobs in our city as a result of our 100% renewable electricity target, which we've now achieved. And one of the policies we're collaborating on in this next phase of government is renewable energy as an economic driver for our economy. Mm. More jobs, and we'll produce and store more of our power ourselves here in Canberra.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. What about compromise? It's sort of, perhaps I'm just bloodied by the federal system and bloodied by existing, as I do in a digital media publication and with a fairly substantial online presence, right? I'm constantly sort of assailed by people who are not interested in compromise, not interested in dialogue, that we seem to be in the basis of political movements in society because of the algorithms of social media. We seem to be more and more, a generalisation of course, wanting our views reinforced rather than the sort of general, what I would call the kind of fundamental dynamism of progress, which is persuasion, which is changing people's minds, right? So an agreement like this, notwithstanding all the, what we've just been talking about for the last few minutes, which is Canberra's another country, we have a different electoral system here. We don't have some of the, the sort of material versus post-material debates here that exist in other states. How do you guys go, though, with your own base and with community perceptions sort of fronting up with a compromise model? Because this is what this is. So how do you find that? Or again, are we in another country, so this isn't a big deal?
Oh, it's still challenging. I think what one of the things that are going to make this work over the next 4 years is that Shane and I continue to talk through issues, but to look ahead too. If I've learned anything in politics, it's yes, you've got to be in the moment and in the week, and a day or a week is a long time in politics, but you've also got to have your sort of medium and long-term view about these questions. And if you observe all of the trends that you've highlighted there, think about how those impact on politics, on the economy, on society. I think, and I've reached the conclusion, that it means cooperation, more consensus building and compromise, because you can have 80% of what you want or you can get 100% of nothing.
Yeah. What do you think, Shane?
And I think despite all the comments you made, there's also a yearning in the community for cooperation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, we hear it said, but we often don't see it reflected then in some of the commentary that you talk about. But it is challenging for us as well. You know, a lot of the we get feedback from people saying, oh, you don't take it up to the Labor Party enough because they don't see that we do have disagreements and we work on things and we push each other to find these ways through. But we do a lot of that, I guess, behind the scenes.
Yes.
And by the time it comes out into the public domain, we've sorted those things out, we've found a way through, which I personally think is a good thing. You know, it is about getting on with it, but people don't see that. And so we get some feedback from people saying, well, we don't see you enough. And so I find that hard to judge because I'm more interested in the outcomes.
Yes. Well, this.
I mean, it's amusing. I get the, you cave into the greens too often.
No,
you know,
this is the thing. You know, you will get this feedback.
What I would say, though, is that, that healthy tension at times has led to some pretty innovative and clever and nation-leading policy outcomes. And so maybe it's a reflection of our personalities, but I think we are both a little bit more policy-driven than many of our counterparts. That's the observation I would make in terms of leadership around other, you know, without casting any aspersions but, you know, we're both in it for the policy outcomes. And my sense of, you know, what the role the ACT can play within the Australian Federation is a leadership role. We're small, yes, but we can get some really good things done if we're prepared to compromise along the way. And I sort of come back to that 80% rule. Right? It's encapsulated for me in a great Mick Jagger, Keith Richards song. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find you get what you need,
yes.
Catherine.
Well, yes, laudable, Shane.
And that smallness that Andrew is speaking about gives us an agility as well, as we can get things done. I think there's also a challenge upon us as leaders of our respective parties to make sure we take our supporters on that journey with us. And I think what they've started to do is they've started to trust us, that even though it's sort of unsure sometimes, we are getting the outcomes. And so certainly my support base is very happy with the fact that we are now at 100% renewable electricity. We've started to build Canberra's light rail network. We've had all these reforms that have been really important to us for a long period of time that, you know, the Labor Party perhaps not disagreed with, but perhaps haven't prioritised. But in working with us, those things have come forward. I think that's also helps people see that it's actually worth it. You know, we went into this election nervous. Historically, right around the world, there's been academic papers done on this, where you've got two-party governments, a larger party and a smaller party. At most elections, the smaller party does badly.
Mm-hmm.
And they posit the reasons for that are, if a government goes badly, the small party is sort of the balance of power holder who's expected to fix everything, gets the blame,
mm-hmm.
and loses seats. If the government goes well, the big party tend to get the credit for it. And that has been observed right across Europe and in all sorts of places. So for us to actually triple our representation at this time really bucks that international trend. And it gives me confidence that our supporters think that we are doing this the right way.
I mean, both of you thoughtfully say what we're delivering to both our constituencies in the event that they are suspicious of compromise is outcomes. And if we continue to collaborate and deliver the outcomes, then we can bring our people with us. But I wonder whether or not, and I mean, this is unknowable, but whether a combination of dynamics in this term may require both of you to be slightly more performative in the deliberation and the resolution of disputes, right? Mm. It's just listening to both of you.
Theatre of politics.
Well, no, but it's sort of like, it's sort of a superficial thing to say, but listening to both of you talk, right? What I hear in the room is we have a relationship, we trust one another that goes broader than transactions. We trust one another to have really quite difficult conversations and not see that on the front page of a newspaper. We trust one another to run a closed process, right, so that we can deliberate until we're done. Yep. Then we turn up and we,
and I think,
hey presto.
Because between 2008 and 2012, we had, when the Greens sat on the crossbench and Labor tried to govern in minority. So we'd have our process inside the cabinet, and then we'd have to go and negotiate with the crossbench, and then we'd have to bring it back inside the cabinet. This is more efficient.
Much more efficient.
Much more efficient.
No, I'm not dissing it, but I just wonder, obviously it's more efficient, obviously, and the benefits, you know, the benefits you've both been able to articulate very clearly, but I just wonder whether... I suppose, look, old fashioned, it's kind of like a test of leadership, isn't it? Like, do you bring your bases with you by delivering the outcomes and saying, trust us, we've got decent judgment, we've got the runs on the board, just keep coming with us, this is where we're going? Or does this require a more performative approach? I don't know. You guys tell me.
One of the challenges we've certainly got this term in having a bigger team is managing some of those expectations even within our own group.
Yes.
And, you know, as the Greens, we'll now start to face some of the challenges that the big parties have always faced.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a broader church within our own group, a range of expectations. We've now got some who get to be ministers and some who've not.
Yep.
That's been a comfortable process for us. It's sort of naturally self-selected. But those things will change over time. So we're going to face some challenges.
Mm.
And I'm certainly having to think about that as the leader of the group and with five brand new members, is how do we learn to deal with those things ourselves? And, you know, the Greens are still relatively a young political party compared to, you know, the Labor Party having worked those things out in their ways over time.
Yeah, mm. yeah, yeah.
I, one quick observation here that I mean, I'd like to think I've helped Shane understand a little bit about the internal culture of the Labor Party and the challenges that I face as the leader. I think the next step, particularly now with six Greens, is I will need to better understand over time the dynamics of that group and understand where they're coming from. But our number one principal operating procedure is no surprises. And so if, you know, I genuinely now, after working in a cabinet with Shane for 8 years, I'm pretty good now at knowing where particular issues are going to emerge are going to be problematic. And if I get it wrong, he can tell me.
Yeah.
And I'm not offended by that.
Yeah.
And it's another thing I've learnt. And my adage in politics, that, you know, I've been around for a little while now, is that I try not to repeat mistakes. I'll acknowledge I will make a mistake and I'll make new ones in this term, but I don't want to repeat mistakes that I've made in the past, and I only want to make the mistake once and then, yep, right, got it, understand now, and we'll move on. And so a little bit of forgiveness as well. Things will go wrong. I mean, look, yesterday the Greens announced something that I sort of knew was coming, but you know, it was a little bit of a surprise. And Shane said, yep, sorry, should have told you. And it's like, yep, okay, understand. Apology accepted, we move on.
Yeah, right.
And I think that highlights that, you know, politics is really just about human dynamics in so many ways. And the ability to just walk down the corridor and have a conversation and maybe say, yeah, look, sorry, we got that wrong. Or, hey, we're unhappy about this. We think you guys have done this and we didn't think that was fair or whatever. Having the maturity just to go and do that, it sounds really toy almost to just say
it, but it actually
comes down to that human dynamic sometimes.
Well, it's why we're all here. I mean, because, like, you know, this life is insane, right? So that we were all drawn to it because...
And how Shane gets through it without drinking coffee is probably the thing.
I don't drink coffee either, but that's not by choice. That is not by choice. Anyway, we're really on the clock now, guys, but just quickly, you know, this sort of outbreak of maturity in my pod cave is sort of... you know, contrary to some of the dynamics that occur in this pod cave. But anyway, that's and refreshingly so. There's an obvious question here. What about coalitions nationally? Now, conventional wisdom is certainly after the 43rd Parliament, you know, there's all kinds of hand-wringing about what that did or did not, you know, do right or wrongly. You know, in Queensland, there was all these sort of muscular statements in Queensland from Labor about, you know, we'll do a deal with the Greens, you know, like never. Right. So that's the norm, as it were. You guys are cutting against the grain. Is there, like, should Labor and the Greens be thinking about some form of coalitionism nationally?
I have a feeling it's inevitable, as much as my federal colleagues don't like that. I think it's certainly the place for it to start is in the Senate, where it is institutionally a fact that the Greens, you know, will be winning one, possibly two senators in each state for the foreseeable future.
Yeah,
and so that's a, you know, a good starting point, a proportional representation system, and you need collaboration. You know, federally, it's pretty hard to see Adam Bandt not being a member for Melbourne for some time to come. So I think there's a sense of inevitability about it, but it needs a degree of management and it's going to need some mature leadership.
Is that what's lacking?
I get the sense that at the moment there's still a little bit of bitterness around particular individual seat contests that just make it hard at the moment. But then I observe that the Liberal and National Party have these same issues and yet they manage a coalition arrangement.
Yes.
And so it's just, there's no world of Australian politics where Labor and the Greens can operate independently of each other and hope to be able to influence, you know, pass legislation and influence Australian politics because at the very least it requires good cooperation in the Senate.
Mm.
Now, you know, Labor may aspire to be able to win a House of Reps majority in our own right, and that's not an unreasonable aspiration. But on the times when, you know, we fall one or two seats short and the Greens have one, two, three, four or five or however many lower house seats that, you know, they're likely to win in the foreseeable future, I mean, what, they're going to turn down government on the basis of, you know, of not accepting the vote of another progressive MP. Mm. Now, the exact terms of the governing arrangements and all of that, I understand, are much more complex at a national level. I get that. But I just think, in the end, having, you know, Labor's not won an election in its own right for, what, Kevin Rudd in 07?
Yeah, Rudd in 07.
Outside of that, won since Keating in 93.
Yeah.
That's not a great track record.
Mm.
We've just won six elections in a row, admittedly, in a more progressive jurisdiction. But I think there's something in our formula that probably should be applied nationally.
Shane?
I think it also takes time. When we first won the balance of power in 2008, that was a much harder term. When we sat on the crossbench, we were all brand new members. We didn't ask or decide to go into the ministry at that point in time. But it also, it does go a lot to the style of the leaders. It'd be fair to say the chief minister at that time wasn't so enamoured with working with the Greens, whereas the successors, Katie Gallagher, who's now in the Senate, of course, and then Andrew have taken an approach where they have seen value in collaborating more than sort of trying to just knock the Greens off again.
Mm.
And I think that that builds up over time, and that starts to create fertile ground then for doing more work together.
You're discounting or you're minimising yourself slightly in that conversation. It's, yes, it requires maturity on Labor's part for sure, but they've got to have a dance partner they can work with.
Oh, sure.
So is it sort of like that's why I'm asking about maturity, not to be gratuitous, not to make personal reflections on individuals, but that's sort of like if we just track back to the 43rd briefly, right? Like everybody, you know, Greens and Labor are proud of the achievements that emerge from that parliament.
Yeah.
But there is this residual, I don't know even what you'd call it, post-trauma about
how people would be traumatised.
No, of course.
But not about policy.
That's the fascinating thing. But that's the thing. Yeah. But it's also how things looked and were presented as well as the policy. So it's sort of like, I suppose I'm struggling to work out how various personalities walk back from that period and then reset. And it requires, which goes back to the compromise point and whether or not your respective political movements can cop compromise as well. So
I think we have to, you know, if we're going to get the policy outcomes, and which is, I guess, where this conversation has very much gone today, if you want to get those outcomes, every now and then you've got to have the willingness to take that step back or forget about an old grudge. They're the sort of things that do get in the way. Again, coming back to that notion about just human relationships, you know, any relationship, if you hold on to the grudges, you are stuck in the past and you can't move forward.
Mm. Well, that's a very nice note to end on.
Hope for the future.
Andrew wants to get hope up. Let's get hope up. We definitely need to get hope up. Thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate your time. Thank you to Miles Martignoni, who is the executive producer of this show. Thank you to Hannah Izzard, who often cuts the show for us. Thanks to my guests. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.